Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's episode is heavy on the mindset side of things with mindset speaker and mindset podcaster, Greg Clunas. Today's episode, we dive heavy into why tiny leaps make for big changes and how to get out of your own way and developing the mindset to get out of your own way. We jump around in terms of lots of different topics around health and fitness and how to apply the mindset principles that Greg talks about into health, fitness, but they're also equally applicable to relationships, to business, to finances, etc. Some of the topics we talked about today: why you need to know what success and failure looks like before you set a new goal, and the reason that finding your why is important for sticking to a goal when times get difficult. The problem with approaching change by force and why willpower is not the answer. One of the things that you'll probably notice from today's episode, one of the reasons I enjoyed this conversation so much, is Greg and I have very similar philosophies when it comes to mindset, but very different approaches how to get there. And I think that bounce back ability, I'm not sure if bounce back ability is a word, but that bouncing off one another, I think has made for a very interesting podcast that I'm going to reflect on myself. I'm definitely going to be re-listening to this one with a notepad and pen just to check in with a couple of things that we talked about. But it's heavy on the mindset side, but I know a lot of these episodes are very, very helpful regardless of what area you're at or what goal it is you're trying to set, because making sure that your mindset is in alignment and you are thinking and taking the action steps that are going to help you hit your end goal is relative, whether that's in health and fitness or whether that's in business and finances or in personal, family, or romantic relationships. Some of the other topics we talked about: when to give up versus when to persevere when something gets too difficult, how to incorporate new behaviors into existing routines, so habit stacking. Greg gives a great example here of his runs. So he's on a weight loss journey at the minute and how he is habit stacking his runs to try and hit his weight loss goal. We also talk about how to change your relationship with failure, dealing with comparison syndrome, and using empathy to not be so hard on yourself, and so much more when it comes to developing your mindset. So without further ado, here is today's episode with Greg Clunas on why tiny leaps make for big changes and developing the mindset to get out of your own way. Enjoy. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Greg Clunas. Greg is the host of the Tiny Leaps, Big Changes podcast and the author of a book of a similar name, Tiny Leaps, Big Changes, Everyday Strategies to Accomplish More, Crush Your Goals, and Create the Life You Want. That book explores the reality behind personal development, that all big changes come from the small decisions we make every day. 5 years ago, Greg started a podcast in his one-bedroom New York City apartment with a simple mission: to redefine personal development. Since then, it's grown to nearly 15 million downloads across 100 plus countries with regular top 20 rankings in the mental health and health categories. Greg is passionate about helping people get out of their own way so they can create real change and build a life they've always wanted. I'm really looking forward to jumping into all things mindset in today's episode. Greg, welcome to the podcast.
Brian, thank you so much for having me. And for those of you listening, thank you for sharing some of your time with me today.
Mate, I am really looking forward to diving into all things mindset today. But can you tell everybody listening, even though I did a very short touch on your backstory there about setting up the podcast 5 years ago, etc., but can you tell everybody listening a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, so I like to think of myself as pretty much just a regular person trying to make changes in their life, trying to grow and be the best version of myself. And the podcast, the book, pretty much everything that I do is essentially just documenting that process. I'm very, very, it's important to me that I'm not seen or presented in any way as an expert in everything that I talk about, because personal development, as you know, Brian, is such a, it's such a unique thing. Like, it involves everything in your life. Like everything that you do can be personal development. Personal development doesn't have to just be the journaling or the meditation or the working out. It's also how you think about the world. It's also your viewpoint evolving over time. It's also the conversations you have with your friend. So there's no possible way to be an expert, quote unquote, in personal development. Instead, what I think the industry needs and what I try to bring to it is less, hey, look at me, I'm an expert, listen to me, and more, here's what I've tried, here's what's worked for me, here's how we can think about something, and you can take all of that and apply it to your situation.
I love that. And I think that's what makes your approach so relatable. Like when I was diving into your podcast and your blog post, it's the mixture with you're very good. And we'll talk into some of these today about giving kind of step-by-step processes on how people should think and what they should consider. But I think it's the way you tie in your stories and your experiences, which what really makes it connect, because it cements the point way more. I'm curious, Greg, and I want to dive straight in, because since we've talked about, or since we've arranged this podcast, I've been dying to pick your brain on a few things. And I want to start with, which is probably the biggest dragon to slay for a lot of people, and that's getting out of their own way. And the language that I've used on the podcast in the past is, you know, don't let your own biggest enemy live between your two ears. Can you talk a little bit about people getting out of their own way and either what you recommend people start to consider first, or why is it that you think people are getting in their own way when it comes to setting a goal for themselves or hitting a target or hitting any specific goal, whether it be fitness related, personal, romantic relationships, finances, etc. Can you expand on that and talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I'm going to say something that is not going to be a shock to anybody listening to this. Changing things is hard. And doing that for a long period of time is incredibly difficult. It's a massive mountain to climb. And I think part of what people forget when they get into personal development, they've been doing it for a while, whether that's in their fitness or some other area of their life. If you've been doing it for a while, you start to forget how difficult that climb was in the beginning. Now, what we need to look at is, why was that climb so difficult? Well, there's a lot of factors, but it really comes down to, a part of it is how we identify. So when you are a certain type of person, let's say that you love running or you love cycling, that's your thing. You identify partially as the type of person who goes out for a run, the type of person who goes out on your bike. And if you don't have that identity, picking up a bike or putting on those running shoes is sometimes the hardest thing in the world, because it goes against the identity that you have. And that identity, you may not even really be aware of what it is, but you do identify as something. So if you don't have that workout identity, if you don't have that nutrition identity, if you don't have the history of accomplishing goals and getting progress and growing, it's the hardest thing in the world to start that process. So one of the things that we need to look at when we're talking about getting in our own way is that this never truly goes away. Like, yes, we get better at the things that we get good at. So for example, if we've been running for a while, we get better at going out for that run, both in the actual like physical process of running, but also in the mental and emotional side of, am I going to do it today or not? But we don't necessarily get better at all the other areas of our lives. Like, we're just addressing that one thing. And so when you look at personal development, what you actually see is a combination of changing multiple different areas of your life, oftentimes unrelated to each other, things that while they do affect each other, they don't necessarily feed into each other, meaning that success as a runner doesn't necessarily mean you're all of a sudden great at managing your money. So you're constantly in this scenario of picking up from scratch, changing something dramatically about you and your identity and how you see yourself, and going through that enormous initial pain of getting to a place where now you have that identity. So that's the first big thing, is we need to recognize that this stuff is actually difficult. And a lot of what's going on in the industry right now is this messaging that, oh, well, if you're not doing it, you're just not good enough. Or if you're not spending all your time like meal prepping or doing whatever it is, like you're just lazy, or you're like, there's all this talking down to people, and we're forgetting that this is actually really difficult. It's not easy to take control of your life. It's not easy to be conscious about the decisions that you make on a day-to-day basis. Like, that is inherently a difficult thing to do. Now, the reason we get in our way is because of that. Change is hard and scary. And every time we have to go through it, we're going to move away from it. We're going to mentally and emotionally go into ourselves because we want to avoid the hard and scary thing. And so that might not show up as actual fear. You're not sitting there in your day-to-day life, like quivering in your boots, but you are going to avoid doing the things that you know will make changes because you're afraid of that actual change. You're both afraid of what if it doesn't work, and you're afraid of what if it does work and I'm not good enough? What if it does work and I'm not able to maintain it? What if it does work and it's not what I actually wanted? So because of that unknown, that scary thing that we now are choosing to go down the path of, we're putting ourselves in a situation where we're more likely, like it's actually more likely when you start something that you're not going to show up than it is that you're going to show up. And then that gets into the whole question about how we solve that. One thing people always try to rely on is willpower. And Brian, I don't know if you know this. I don't know if your audience knows this. Willpower is, quite frankly, the most unreliable tool that humans have. It just does not last when you need it. Like in those moments when that decision that you make is going to be the most critical, that's when your willpower is depleted. That's when you're not going to be able to make the right decision. And that's when you're going to end up cheating on your diet or spending the money that you didn't plan to spend or whatever it is. So we try to approach change by force. We try to say, okay, I just need to be good enough. I just need to be productive enough. I just need to show up enough. I just need to get there every single day. And we approach it from this very logical, planned approach to things. When in actuality, the things that are stopping us from doing it, the things that are getting in our way when we're trying to do this, is emotional. It's the fear of change. It's the fear of what that might mean. It's the fear of, are we good enough? And it's also the emotional side that we need to utilize in order to make that change. So I spoke to a guest a while back on my podcast, this guy, Carl Stabe, and he introduced this idea of willpower versus waypower. And I'll stop a second after this. So the idea is willpower comes from the logical side. I want to do X, so I'm going to do X. That's logical. Waypower comes from your why. It comes from what's actually important to you. Why do you want to do X? Why, if you don't do this, what are the consequences of doing that, of not doing it? What does the pain look like if you don't show up on this run or on this diet or whatever it is you're doing? What does that pain look like versus the pain of and this the fear of doing it? I think if we start to approach our personal development from a more empathetic, emotional point of view rather than the logical, oh, I just need to check the boxes point of view, we'll start to not only see more change in the long term, but we'll also allow ourselves to fail more often. And that failing part is, as you know, incredibly important for the journey.
Oh, there's so much there that I'm going to go in multiple directions here, but I want to just park it for a second on the changing is hard. Like one of the things that I think is important to recognize for people for sure, and Greg has said it there, is like going from 0 to 1 is so much harder than going from 1 to 10. Like starting anything new is always the most difficult part of any journey, whether that's a new training program, whether that's a new diet plan, whether that's a new job, whether that's a new savings regimen for your finances, whatever it is. I have a few notes here that I want to kind of pick apart with Greg because there's so much there, but I want to stay on willpower for a second and the problem with approaching change by force. I'm curious, would you recommend that, and you mentioned identifying your why there, do you think, or is that a step or the first foundational step, maybe even in terms of getting out of your own way, figuring out why you're doing something in the first place? What would you recommend to people when it comes to, say, identifying their why?
So here's my thing with finding your why, because I'll be perfectly honest with you. I just maybe a month ago finally figured out my concrete why for doing the podcast and the book and everything that I do. I've always had ideas of it, but it's never felt quite right. And that's something that I think we need to allow ourselves to recognize, is that your why is not only going to be something that changes as you change, it also doesn't have to be anything insane. Like, it doesn't have to be because somebody's dying of cancer and if you don't do this, you're not going to help them. Like, we don't need to get that dramatic about it. Finding your why is valuable from the emotional side of things. But what I would say, if you're looking at, okay, what did the steps look like in getting out of my own way? There's two paths you can take. You can go that emotional route, find your why, figure out what this is actually going to mean for you, what success looks like, what failure looks like. And we can talk about the steps to do that. Or you can go another route, which is more of a systems route. And what I mean by this is our bodies as humans, we have a built-in mechanism for doing things every single day. And it's the exact way that we create habits. It's the exact way that we create routines. We take certain things and we put them into, think of your brain as like a filing cabinet. We've got a folder in there that says, hey, this just happens. We don't have to think about it. Willpower is not a part of it. This just happens. And there's actually been studies that a phenomenon called ego depletion, which is essentially just willpower draining. And a phenomenon called ego depletion only happens when you have to consciously make a choice to do something. So every time you consciously choose something, you drain a little bit of your willpower. But if something is a habit or a routine, it's just something that happens, you're not actually affecting your willpower, or at the very most, you're affecting it to a lesser extent. So there's two paths you can take if you want to get out of your own way and start taking more action. The first is, let's sit down, figure out our why, and really tackle this from the emotional side of things. Or, and or, you can approach it from a systems side of things, figure out what you need to do in your life to build the action, those key behaviors for your goal, into a routine that becomes less draining on that willpower mechanism.
Yeah, well, one of the visualization processes that I've always used for willpower is like, a 2-liter bottle or a 2-gallon water bottle. I'm like, that will get depleted as the day goes on. You know, as someone that's worked with a lot of people on their nutrition over the years, it's not a coincidence that if you've had a bad day and you're trying not to, you know, explode at employees, or you're trying not to bite back at your boss, that you end up eating a massive chocolate bar when you get home. I'm like, that's right. Because you've been depleting your willpower all day. And now that chocolate bar is like, you're at the bottom of your barrel. You mentioned there about kind of habits and what you do. And one of the lines I use on the podcast most frequently is, tell me what you do every day and I'll tell you where you'll be in a year. What role do you think habits play in terms of, and we'll get into success and failure and what that looks like for people. What role do you think habits play when it comes to either people getting out of their own way or just success in general, whatever success looks like for you, as I said, we'll dive into that. What role do you think habits play in that?
Well, as you said, at the end of the day, success is just a function of what you've done. It's not about what you think about. It's not about the ideas you have. Those do have value. It's what are you actually doing every day? There's a reason I called the show Tiny Leaps, Big Changes, because those tiny leaps are the things that lead to big changes. The actions you take on a day-to-day basis drive the results you get over a long period of time. So It really becomes very binary when we look at day-to-day behavior. If you are trying to start a business and you take the actions required to do so, then you'll have a business, versus not taking the action, you will not have a business. That's a binary formula. Now, obviously, humans don't work binary, but that is the reality of the situation. It's either a yes, I did it, or a no, I did not do it. Now, the real question becomes, how do we improve the chances of the yes, I did it? Well, that's where habits come into play. If we can take the key behaviors of a goal, let's say that goal is, once again, I want to start a business. Well, let's break that down into the things that might need to happen to do that. Well, first, you'll need a business idea, then you'll need a product for that, and a market idea, and how you're going to take it to market, and all of those things, right? And you can Google pretty much any goal you have, you can Google what the steps are to do it. So figuring out what to do is no longer the problem. We need to then figure out, okay, these are the behaviors that need to happen. These are the key behaviors over the course of whatever period of time I'm trying to accomplish this goal. Let's take one of these behaviors and build it into an existing routine. And that's a key thing here. We don't want to try and create new habits starting from scratch, because that is going, what's already an uphill climb, you're basically turning it into Everest. What you want to do is look at the behaviors and the habits that you already engage in and find a place to slot in that new behavior. So it's a concept called habit stacking. So that you're able to essentially take advantage of things that already happen as a trigger for the thing that you want to add in to your day to day. Now, if you do this in a very systematic way with, here are the key behaviors to accomplish this goal, I need to do all of the things on this list over the next period of time, I'm going to take one of them, slot them into my day-to-day routine, and do that over a long period of time. Eventually, you complete everything on that list, and boom, you have a business.
Do you have an example of how to incorporate new behavior into existing routine, one that you've either recommended to somebody and they've applied, or one that you've done yourself?
Here's a good example of this. So I recently got into running. It's not something, I've spent my entire life hating running, but my girlfriend is a very big into running. One of my best friends is very big into running. So after a while of them talking about it, eventually my curiosity event like just got piqued. Plus, with everything shut down, I couldn't go to the gym. And so it was a great way to keep fit during all of this. How I found that I was able to stay consistent with running, which I've been consistent now for probably about 4 to 5 months, is doing it at the end of my workday. And so how my day is typically structured, roughly 4:30, I'm eating my like pre-run snack. 5 or 5:30, I'm going out for my run. I get back, I shower, stretch, all of that. Then Rachel and I are making dinner. And then after dinner and watching TV for a little bit, I'm probably getting back to work. But I've looked at the routine that previously existed, which was essentially the same thing without that running piece. Like my day was structured exactly the same. I worked until 5, 5:30, 6, made dinner with Rachel, my girlfriend, and we watched TV for a little bit. And then I went back to work roughly 9:10 and then went to bed roughly midnight. All I did was look at that routine and said, where in this could I add a run? Where in this would it be most valuable to me? And over the course of 2 or 3 months, I tested that. I tried it first thing in the morning and did not like it. I tried it pre-dinner where I have it now, liked it a little bit more, tried it during lunch, didn't like it. It's typically too hot. And so I just tested, where does this routine fit for, or where can I add this behavior into my existing routine? Found the place that felt the best for me. And that allowed me to make it easier to stick with it, because now I know 5 p.m., 5:30, when I hit like the sleep button on my computer, that's the trigger for I'm going to go lace up my shoes and go for a run.
How long do you recommend people test? You mentioned there, and it's interesting that that's what you said, because I run ultra marathons, and the way that I got into it was stacking the runs at the end of my weight sessions, because I'm like, well, I'm already in the gym. So it's interesting you said that, but I'm curious, because I have my process for this. How long would you recommend testing? Because you said you tried it in the morning, didn't work, tried it midday, didn't work. What would be your general recommendation for a testing period for a new habit that you're trying to, you know, put a new behavior into an existing routine? How long would you do that for?
Mm-hmm. I typically do things for about a week when I do a test. And this is true for, I'm a big data nerd. I test pretty much everything, whether it's marketing based or stuff in my real life, and try to pull data from it so I can figure out what the 80-20 looks like. For those of you who aren't familiar, the 80-20 refers to the Pareto principle that 80% of your results comes from 20% of your behaviors. So I typically test things for about a week. But for example, with running, I tried it in the morning for, I think, about a month. And I knew after the first 3 times that I didn't like it, which wasn't shocking to me because I've never been a morning person. I just felt like I was slogging through it first thing. However, at that time, I didn't know that I liked it running in the afternoon. I had, or in the evening. I didn't have that data yet. So I stuck with it for about a month to see, is this something that's going to feel better after a period of time? And it did to some extent, but for the most part, I still just didn't like it being that early and going out for a run. So then that's what prompted me to try it at the end of the day, which I tried for about a week and liked. And then I tried it in the middle of the day during one particular week where it was just raining a lot. So that was kind of an accidental test, but realized I didn't like it.
I think that's great for anybody listening here, especially for the fitness routine, because regularly I'll have people that either message me on Instagram or on social media and they're like, look, I don't enjoy working out. They're working out for, you know, an outcome driven process versus, you know, a process that where they're enjoying it. And I'll say, well, you know, mix up what you're doing, you know, test out different workout routines. But that's a great point for testing out different times in the day, because I train in the morning and I love how it sets up my day and it's the complete reverse. Whereas I train in the evening, I get this cortisol driven second wind and then I can't sleep, so it doesn't work for me. But I think testing is key. I want to pull back on the success and failure, because you mentioned that, and I'm always so curious to talk to people who are doing as well as you, who are impacting as many people as you are with your books, your podcast, your platforms. And I split my kind of success and failure into two brackets. So one of the things I've discussed on the podcast in the past that people will be familiar with is, you know, identifying what success looks like for you, because that's a very subjective thing. Yes. But also identifying what failure looks like, you know, because you have to have, Charlie Munger is one of my favorite lines. He's like, tell me where I'm going to die and I just won't go there. And it's a useful filtering process for failure. How do you separate, or what do you recommend for people separating what success and failure looks like for them? What's your kind of go-to on that?
Yeah, so my approach to failure is a little bit different in that there are, so again, I'm a big data nerd, and I tend to think of things in terms of like their status, right? So if we look at the status code for this, we've got three. We have success. So this was a successful thing that we were able to get. I don't actually consider pretty much anything a failure. I just consider it in progress, or I've abandoned it. Like, it's not something I'm interested in anymore. And that to me isn't a failure, because getting successful at something you don't like is a waste of time. So for me, I'm either I've successfully done something, or this thing that didn't work this time, I'm still trying. As far as I'm concerned, unless I'm never going to do something again, if I, for example, let's say I had a goal of losing 10 pounds in 3 months and I wasn't able to accomplish that. That to me is not a failure. Like, you look at that and you say, well, here was the metric that you set and you didn't actually meet that. But did I lose 5 pounds? Did I lose 7 pounds? Did I lose 8 pounds? Maybe I didn't hit 10, but did I actually make progress? If I did, then why would I ever say that that's a failure? I'm still better off than where I was, and that has to count for something. Not to mention, if I didn't hit my 10, I'm not now going to say, well, that was it. That was my one chance to do this. I guess I'm done forever and I'm just stuck at this weight. I'm obviously going to keep going. I'm obviously going to just extend the timeline or try a different workout or try a different nutrition plan or just change something. So how should that be considered a failure when I'm in the progress of it? I'm learning what I need to do, what didn't work, what did work. I was able to make progress and I'm moving on with my life. So I don't know if that's necessarily helpful to anyone else, but I've just never fully understood the concept of, oh, this was a failure. Like, that to me doesn't make sense.
That's such a great message. And just to play devil's advocate, not even devil's advocate, I was the person that had that complete misunderstanding of failure. I had failure for years was hardwired as the end thing. You know, it was the end, you know, this thing was a failure, I'm a failure, etc. That was the language I used, as opposed to failure is feedback. Like, failure is success training. Like, it's giving you feedback on what to do going forward. But I have to ask the question, because I'm very curious, as someone that works on that kind of similar principle when it comes to failure now, when do you decide to quit something? And when do you decide to persevere with it? What's your kind of metric, or what's your even self-talk when it comes to, I'm doing this thing, I'm going to quit this now, versus it might be perceived from the outside as a failure, or it's not going in the direction you want for whatever reason, you know, fitness goal, business goal, relationship goal, etc. What's your feedback, or what's your process for persevering versus when it's time to quit something?
I'm a pretty simple guy. It really just comes down to, am I still interested? Am I having fun? Am I enjoying myself? Is this something that I'm still curious about? There's any number of things that drove my decision to get into that thing in the first place. If those feelings are still there, then I'm still there. If they're not, why would I waste my time? It's not interesting to me anymore. So I'm moving on to the next thing. And to give a specific example of that, for example, for a while with my fitness, I was doing a 5x5 routine, like the strong lifts 5x5. And that was interesting to me. Like for the first probably 3 or 4 months of really going through it and cycling and some other workouts throughout, like it felt like a fun exercise that was getting results. At some point, I honestly got bored and found myself dreading doing that workout. So I changed to a different workout. Now, of course, I wasn't going to say, okay, well, I guess I'm done getting fit now, but I just changed to something that was more interesting to me. And I think I picked up getting into kettlebell stuff at that point.
Yeah, I think that check-in is, I have a slightly different process for what I do. I'll always, similar to what we said earlier about identifying what success means, what you said at the top of the podcast, like I will always make the decision based on, am I going to quit this thing now because it's too difficult? If it's still in alignment with whatever the end goal is, I'm like, you just power through and persevere through. But that check-in is so important in terms of, are you enjoying it now? Are you bored? But it sounds like anyone that ever brings up any emotional feeling with, I'm doing this thing, I'm not enjoying it now, or I'm doing this thing and I'm bored of it now, I always jump into, it's a very self-aware thing to ask, because not everybody does it. I didn't do it for years. Like I was in my mid-20s before I asked any of these questions. Have you always been very self-aware, or is that something that you developed over time?
No, all of that, quite honestly, came from the past 5 years of doing this podcast. I've always known sort of who I wanted to be, the type of person that I wanted to be. That's been with me since I was about 13 or 14. But I didn't grow up with a good understanding of how I felt about things, or even just whether it was on an emotional side of things or otherwise. I really didn't have the language to explain myself in a lot of ways. And that's something that I've gone to therapy to work through, that I've spent a lot of time journaling to work through. I've done a lot of introspection. Like I said, this show is largely me sharing what I'm doing. So everything I talk about is something that I've either used and tested or actively do in my day-to-day life. And in that process of finding things and trying them and figuring out what I think about them and having to come up with thoughts about them for the podcast to be able to share it, that's sort of what led me to better understanding who I was and, more importantly, what kind of life I wanted to live right now. Because, for example, I know that my approach to following my interest and my curiosity doesn't work for everybody, and it may not produce the absolute best results possible. For example, if your goal is you want to do a bodybuilding show, at some point you're going to lose interest in the stuff you're doing, but you still have to do it if you want those results. That's not what I'm trying to do, and that's not what I'm interested in. And so I'm really just trying to live a life where, as much as possible on a day-to-day basis, I can be inspired and interested and curious about the things that I do every single day, while also pursuing these much larger, bigger, world-changing goals that I have, so that on both fronts, I'm able to be as happy as possible.
How do you goal set? What's your process for that?
So there's a few different approaches that I take to goal setting. I have these like very large goals. For example, the one that I'm sure most entrepreneurs say, like, I want to just have a $1 billion company and I want to run a tech product. And there's a lot of big things around that. When I'm looking at the individual goals to lead to those big goals, so those big goals are just sort of things that I've always known I've wanted. When I'm looking at the individual goal setting for leading to that point, let's say, for example, right now at my company, we're developing a software product and setting goals around the release of that. I have either the SMART goal framework, which I think we've all heard of, specific, measurable, actionable, results-based, and timed. But I also develop my own framework called the LEAP framework. And this is more so for goals that don't have a specific outcome that you're trying to produce. So let's say you just want to fix your diet, like you want to fix your relationship to food. That shouldn't have an end date, because that's the kind of thing that you want to be around for the rest of your life. That shouldn't have this specific outcome that you're targeting. It should be long-term driven. It should be empathetic to where you are right now. If you have four young kids at the same time, it might be harder to meal prep than someone else, and you have to be aware of that. It needs to, of course, be actionable and focus around things that you can actually do, but it also needs to be process driven. And what I mean by that is, and I did this when I got into running, for me, it was less about I want to do this speed or I want to do this time, and more about, do I get out and run? If I'm in the process of running, I am successful at this goal. And that's what the LEAP framework is meant to sort of allow for, are goals that don't need to be specific and don't need to have a particular outcome in a particular time period, but are more so, we want to create long-term life-changing relationships with better habits, better routines, and better actions on a day-to-day basis. So that's, I tend to use LEAP stuff, LEAP goals, because there's very few things that I feel need to be done in a very specific time period. But then obviously if it does, I'll rely on sort of the SMART framework for that.
I'm going to throw you a slight curveball now, just based on a point Please. You made there on the, say, for example, someone with four kids and, you know, less time to meal prep, for example, just to kind of, someone with low time management or not a lot of free time is probably the better wording there. How or what would you recommend for them to stop them comparing themselves to people who are in a different situation? Because a problem a lot of people that listen to this podcast, myself included, I am definitely in this bracket of people where comparison syndrome is a real thing. Where you identify with, you know, I want to be lean or skinny, or I want to be big and muscular, and you're comparing yourself against somebody else on Instagram or comparing yourself against somebody else in, you know, in the gym or wherever it is. How do you recommend, or what do you recommend people look at or check in with when it comes to comparison syndrome for someone that, you know, to keep the example of the four kids with less time versus someone that, you know, is in great shape on Instagram?
Yeah. So first of all, I love the term comparison syndrome, and I'm going to start using that.
Brilliant.
So I'm going to be honest with you. There's no step-by-step tactic to solve this. This is something I've been really harping on a lot with the podcast lately. It's going to be partially the subject of my next book when I really start focusing there. It's the focus of the software we're building and all the products we're producing. I think it comes down to a major problem in what personal development has become, and as a result of that, how we all think about it. I think the only reason someone would compare themselves to others is because they are not being empathetic to themselves. And the reason that there is a major lack of empathy in the world of personal development, whether on the coach side or on the person actually doing it side, is simply because for such a long period of time, personal development has been about just do it. Like it's that model of, well, you just have to show up. It doesn't matter what situation you're in. You just have to be good enough. You just have to be better. That, like, this industry has gotten so corrupted with this idea that humans are somehow robots who, regardless of what's going on, they can just always get in and punch the numbers. And sometimes it's just not possible. Sometimes life punches you in the face and you have to lay down for a second. And if we don't start allowing that to be okay, if we don't start letting ourselves recognize that the situation we're in is very different from the situation someone else is in, then we're never going to be able to actually make changes in our lives. Like, we're constantly going to be in that cycle of trying to aim for something that is just quite frankly out of reach. And I know in this industry, we don't like saying that. Some things, it's not about, is it impossible? It's about, is it impossible right now? Because when we really look at where we are in relation to a particular goal, like right now, I've been on a weight loss journey for the past 6 months. I started at like 207, 206. I'm like 193 now with 24.4% body fat. You know what's impossible for me right now? in 3 months or in 2 months, I could not get down to 10% body fat and do a bodybuilding show. That would not be, even if it was physically possible with some kind of performance enhancing thing, it would not be healthy or sustainable in any way whatsoever. That is an impossible goal for me right now. That doesn't mean it's impossible in my lifetime, but it does mean it's impossible based on where I am right now. And I have to allow myself to be empathetic about that so that when I see people who are at that point, when I see people who are 12% body fat and in a place where they are sustainable, I'm not going to compare myself to them because where they are has nothing to do with where I'm starting. It has zero to do with it. So I think it's one of those things that we unfortunately can't just like fix. Like it's not like a thing you can just go list in your journal and all of a sudden, boom, you're fixed. But ultimately, it comes down to how we think about personal development and what role it plays in our day-to-day lives and how we think of ourselves in that experiment. If we don't start being empathetic to ourselves and allowing ourselves to be wherever we are and start wherever we are and make progress and not get mad at ourselves just because we lost 8 pounds instead of 10 pounds, then there's really nothing that's going to be able to fix that long term. Like that has to start with empathy.
That's fantastic. I love that. It's such a great message. Like one of the personal mantras I live my life by is don't compare your chapter one to somebody else's chapter 20. That it's just, it's not helpful. And if you're comparing yourself, compare against where you are and be realistic with your time frame. I think there's so much there. As you said, like if you wanted to step on show on a bodybuilding stage, you probably could if you did this, that, or the other, but that's not going to be healthy. It's not going to be sustainable. Right. And it's probably out of alignment with your larger vision, which is so important, and keeping kind of focus on that.
Just really quickly, I want to add one last thing to that. If we're looking at this from a like process point of view, I think there actually is one thing we can start doing individually. When you start your personal development journey, or when the next time you sit down to assess your journey, start with empathy. Like approach it first from identifying where you are now, who you are now, what you're struggling with right now, what you're dealing with right now, the crutches that you have right now. Like just really sit down and make that stuff clear for yourself first, and then start goal setting, then start thinking about where do I want to go. That way you're at least setting those goals in context with the situation you find yourself in.
I think that gives me a perfect segue, because the point I wanted to talk on was self-talk. And I think empathy is probably a nice little way to transition into that. How would you recommend, or what, even if you want to use yourself as an example, in terms of the self-talk when it comes to being more empathetic with yourself? Because we can be our own, you know, as I said at the top of the podcast, the analogy I use is having your own biggest enemy living between your two ears. Like we can be our own biggest enemy, and I love your message for getting out of your own way. But how would you recommend people speak to themselves in terms of being more empathetic, and what self-talk would you, or what's even your process, take it in whatever direction you like? And I'm curious to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think when it comes to self-talk, that's something that I love that you're asking. What it comes down to at the end of the day is that empathy also means that sometimes like you're going to talk yourself down, because we're all humans and that happens. And you have to also let that be okay. Now, that doesn't mean that you believe it. That doesn't mean that you're sitting there and like beating yourself up. Like that's not what I'm arguing for. What I'm saying is empathy also means I'm a human being. Sometimes I'm going to be in a lower mental state than other times. And sometimes I'm going to feel like, excuse my language, shit. And if I get mad at myself because I'm doing that, if I do everything in my power to avoid that as much as possible, that's oftentimes going to create more problems than just letting yourself be yourself. Just be a human being. Now, with that said, and I just wanted to make that point, like we have to sort of just be okay with it sometimes. For me, what I try to do is, of course, when it's happening, I just take a break. I like relax for a second. If I've been working every day for 14 hours and working out and managing my nutrition and spending time with my girlfriend and supporting my my mom. Like, if I'm doing all of this, of course, at some point, I'm not going to have anything left for me. I'm not going to have anything left to stop myself from beating myself up, to stop myself from looking in the mirror and seeing more fat than I want. Like, it's going to happen. When that happens, I just stop everything and take time for myself. Like, work doesn't matter in that moment. The financial stuff I'm dealing with doesn't matter in that moment. Like, nothing else matters in that moment. In that moment, it's Greg time. Like, Greg needs to have a relationship with himself and focus on that. And in that space, I start to essentially just analyze what I'm feeling. I think that there is, and I haven't actually done the research on this. It's something I'm planning for a future episode. I think language is a powerful tool for analyzing what's going on in our head, because while we all sort of talk to ourselves in the language that we natively speak, there is a difference between the language that's happening in your head versus what comes out when you speak. And this is why we often find ourselves like able to so clearly think something, but as soon as we start talking about it, our tongues are tied. Like, we just can't find the right words. I think that by turning our thoughts into words that we say out loud, we force ourselves to analyze it. And by analyzing it, we start to realize how ridiculous a statement it actually is. And we see this happen a lot, to a lesser extent, when you like hear a word over and over again, or you read a word over and over again, and all of a sudden it starts to feel weird. And that's because you've never actually stopped and analyzed that word. You just take it as a whole. Now you're breaking it down and mentally analyzing it and thinking, oh, that's a really strange looking thing. The same thing can happen with our thoughts. If we're starting to beat ourselves up, sit down and say that out loud, like say that actual thought that you just had out loud to yourself and hear how weird it actually sounds, because you're forcing yourself to analyze it. And the minute you start analyzing it, you start to realize that's not actually true.
I love that. I think that's possibly one of the benefits of therapy and journaling and speaking to people, because it gets it out there. I had Colin O'Brady on the podcast a few months ago. Colin is the first man ever to cross Antarctica solo.
And
yeah, it's just an incredible feat. Like, one of those, anyone that's attempted it before has either failed or died. And he said every morning he got up and would repeat to himself, I'm strong, I'm capable, and just would repeat that in the morning out loud to try and reinforce the affirmation. And I think, it's a different conversation with affirmations, but that self-talk and analyzing that is so important.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, because like that is the value. And I don't personally really use mantras or affirmations or anything like that, but that is why that works. It's because they're in that process of turning thoughts into words. You're forced to engage with those words. You're forced to analyze them and look at them and really address them for validity. And so when you're whether saying something positive to yourself or something negative to yourself, by analyzing it, you can start to recognize what it really is.
Yeah, I think, and you know, this is someone that's written a book, and I was the same with my last book. I remember finishing Rewire Your Mindset and thinking, if no one buys this but my mom and my sister, it was worth it for the process of trying to work out what was going on in my head.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
I think by the end of my first book, I was just like, you know what? This thing's only job is to exist in the world. So whatever happens, happens.
I love that. And I know that you're researching and you're on the putting the plans in place for a new book, but I've just got one final question that I want to ask you, Greg, and it may be to do with books, it may be to do with podcasts or courses, which I'll give links and give you to kind of call to action to people at the end. But what are you most excited about right now? It might be completely off the rails in terms of something non-business or in any other area of your life, but what are you most lit up or fired up about or excited about right now?
Yeah, so I'm going to cheat a little bit here give you multiple answers while giving you one. So I was thinking about this the other night, actually. Like, I remember I was going to bed and I just felt this like giddy energy, right? Like that feeling of like being able to play and just have fun in my life. And I started to realize like I'm most excited about my life at the moment. And what I mean by that, and that wasn't always the case and may not be the case in the future. Like it's everything's a cycle. But right this moment, I'm most excited about where my life is going, because I had this realization that there are many areas of my life right now that I am starting a brand new journey in. And what I mean is, in my journey to lose weight, like, I'm just in the beginning. I've accomplished some and learned a ton. And over the next year, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I'm so excited to see how much I've grown as a result of starting this process. And in the same way, I'm currently for my business, but also for a little bit of personal, quite frankly, learning how to code. And I was a computer science minor at college, so it's not completely new to me. But I'm, in order to build out the suite of products that I want our company to have, I want to be able to actually take those ideas and turn them into a real thing. And so I started learning to code, and that's this really frustrating and annoying experience. But I'm so excited to see where 3 to 5 years from now that takes me. And with my relationship, we just moved. I lived in New York City for 10 years. We moved to New Hampshire. We're going to be here for at least 5 years as she completes a PhD program. So I'm excited to see what that does. I'm excited to because of COVID, I haven't seen my mother or my sister or my family in a long time. So I'm excited for that. So I'm just sort of in this place where it feels like I'm going on journeys in each of the different areas of my life right now. And I'm at the beginning of those journeys. And ahead of me lies all of this frustration and pain and potential and wonder and brilliance. And I'm just so excited to take those journeys and learn from them. And I often think back to the fact that this podcast, Tiny Leaps, Big Changes, it's changed everything about my life. I started it when I was 23. And since then, I've been able to write a book. I've been able to partner with some of the most amazing brands in the world. I've been able to meet some of the most amazing leaders in the world. I've reached, I think we're actually close to 20 million downloads at this point. Like, it's changed so much. And that just started 5 years ago. So looking ahead at the next 5 years with everything that I'm excited about now, like, that's what I'm most excited about, is where everything is going to be.
I'm not a bit surprised with those podcast downloads. You are giving so much to the world in terms of your message and the way that you're helping people. It's not even a bit surprising that that's the way the numbers have gone. And with the books and all these good things coming to you, like, it's, you know, the universe gives you what you put out. So I absolutely love hearing that, Greg. It's so inspiring from my side, and people listening, I know, are going to take the same message. So I just wanted to say personally a massive thank you from me. I've really enjoyed this conversation. There's a couple of things I'm going to reflect on myself. So I'm going to give you a shout out to everybody that is listening. Where is the best place for them to either pick up your book, talk a little bit about your course for coming through that, and where they can connect with you online? And I will link all of those in the show notes for today's episode.
Yeah. So first of all, thank you so much for having me, Brian. And for those of you still listening, I really, really appreciate you. And I have so much respect for you, for the journey that you're on, the journey you're about to start, and the journey that you are going to continue going forward. So really, really much love from me. If you want to connect, you can find the podcast on Instagram at Tiny Leaps. So just do a search for Tiny Leaps on Instagram and give us a follow. Send me a message. I respond to everybody, and I love having those conversations. Give the podcast a try. It's completely free. There's 560 something episodes. So there's a lot to go through, and there's a lot of topics that may be relevant to you that may not be relevant to you. But do a quick search for Tiny Leaps, Big Changes wherever you're listening to this show, and give it a try. And then finally, a lot of the stuff that I talked about in today's interview came from a course that I put out about 2 weeks ago called The Consistency Code. And in that course, I really try to break down why we have such a hard time sticking with things for long periods of time. And as you know, change only happens because we do something for a long period of time. So this course is really meant to help solve that problem and give you the tools to take action in your day-to-day life. And if you want to learn more about that, you can go to consistencycourse.com. That's consistencycourse.com.
Love it. And for everybody listening, you can click on everything that Greg has mentioned. It'll be in the description wherever you listen to podcasts, and it will also be on the show notes page on briankeenfitness.com. Check out the podcast, check out the book, check out the course, especially if you're someone that struggles with consistency. Greg, thank you so much again.
Thank you so much for having me.
So there you go, Greg Clunas on why tiny leaps make for big changes and developing the mindset to get out of your own way. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. As always, if this is your first time listening, you've never heard this before, but if this is your first time listening, hit that subscribe button, hit that follow button wherever you listen to podcasts for episodes coming every single Monday. And for those of you who are longtime listeners, thank you again for listening. I hope you enjoyed. Be sure to hit me up on Instagram, Brian_Keen_fitness. Let me know what you thought. I'll catch you all next week.